And I'm Kat, and welcome to the Crime Chat. I am your forensic femme fatale. Natalie is your true crime addict connoisseur.
We're just two normal girls who obsess about dark crimes, evil minds, and occasionally the unknown.
And here's your disclaimer, chatters. The following Crime Chat contains adult content and descriptions of violent and fishy scenarios today. So your listener discretion is advised.
You have been warned. And before we get into today's Crime Chat, Kat, what have you done?
It's Shark Week, which is also why we're doing this episode. Well, by this time comes out, Shark Week will be over. But I'm watching Shark Week now, and that's probably the only thing I've had time to watch.
Really? Because you've been working. Just,
yes. In finals for the class that I'm in. And then I got a new class that I have 30 students, so I'm trying to grade all their stuff on a weekly basis, do my own schoolwork.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I haven't had a whole lot of time. But it is Shark Week, and I did manage to sneak in some episodes, even if I was kind of working at the same time. What about you?
So I have been watching House of Dragon.
Yes.
And you have not watched it yet, right?
I've only seen the first two episodes, I believe.
Of this current season?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I like it so far. It's definitely building up to something. You're not happy with it, are you?
No, I love it. I love it.
Oh, do you? Okay.
It's definitely building up to something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that something just happens on Sunday and broken. Just so sad.
Aww.
Yeah. I know. It's just we all knew it was coming. The only complaint I have that I see a difference in it is where in Game of Thrones, when the dragon would attack, they had a whole like musical theme that went along with it, you know, like,
yeah,
it was just very exciting. Yeah. Where in this one, they're not necessarily doing that. So I don't know why. Like, I'm like, not that it's not amazing. It is in a different way. It's just you could tell there's a difference on how, like, when the dragon comes into scene, there's not that dramatic back music, you know. Yeah.
I'm wondering if that's just because the dragons, they were an integral part to Game of Thrones, but they weren't, they had been extinct. Nobody had seen dragons. So maybe they just, whenever the dragons were around, they made it even more theatrical.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
We're still two adult women talking about dragons, okay?
It's fantastical.
It is. The other thing is, there's a movie coming out tomorrow that I want to see so bad, but nobody that I know likes horror movies. Like, nobody. Yeah. I can't convince anybody, but you don't live near me, so I can't convince anybody to go with me. It's terrible. And the movie is called Long Legs, and it's the new Nicolas Cage movie where he plays a psychopath. And apparently, it's supposed to be like the scariest movie of 2024, and I will not be there to see it. I have to wait for it to come out.
You can go?
By myself to a scary movie?
Yeah.
Probably could.
There'll be other people there probably by themselves.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's funny how many people don't like horror. So
not in a theater, because I think it's sensory overload. If you think about, like, way back when, like when Jaws first came out, that was a new level of entertainment.
Yeah. It gave you that visceral feeling, like you felt. It was like The Exorcist, or like...
Yeah, just like that era, that time frame when the movie theaters were so big, and it was like this new level of like... Not that it covered the fear, but it was just... Yeah, I think it's on a different level. And plus, nowadays, everything's streaming, so people are like, I'll just wait for it to come out in, you know, on Netflix or on Prime or whatever. True, right. I mean, I'm guilty just as that, so...
Yeah, and Jaws is one of those movies where... They understood how to tell a story before, you know, a much better movie than what we have, like a lot of movies that come out today. Honestly, Jaws didn't need to physically be on the screen to scare the crap out of us.
Right.
Just the idea of him lurking in the background.
I think that Jaws didn't make an appearance until 1 hour and 2 minutes into the movie.
That's how good it was written.
It was building that intensity and that suspense of like, because you knew it happened. And then, of course, with it being Shark Week and it was the anniversary of Jaws, there was a lot of things that I saw out on social media that was basically saying the incident with the little boy that was killed kind of earlier in the movie, they cut out a scene where you saw the great white come out and up out of the water and eat him. They decided to cut that out to make it more suspenseful, where you had an idea about what was going on without actually having to see it.
Yes. I was like, I remember seeing that scene cut. Like, I remember they did show you the deleted scene and like send it or whatever.
Yeah.
I remember that scene, but I also remember like the fountain, like the spray of blood.
Yep.
Oh.
And then every time I hear a buoy, ding, 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 I always think of, what was her name? Chris, the girl that ran out, it was at the very first scene.
Yeah. The one that, oh God.
That ding, 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 ding. Every time I hear a buoy, that's always I think of.
Oh my God. Anyway. And I think there's another movie that's out that I haven't seen, but I watched a review on it. And apparently, it's really, really, it's really scary. It's a horror movie. It's called Pearl.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I want to check it out. It's like a dark comedy horror. So I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. Horror. But that's about it. So I know that you're going to be focused on Shark Week for this episode.
Donna. Da-na, da-na, da.
So you asked me to do some Nat's Nutty News.
Yeah.
And I had some fun pulling up headlines from around the world. So I'm just going to go. I picked out 10. Okay.
Okay.
So let's get started on this shark episode.
Yeah.
All right. So now, back in the ancient waters of 1988, the Discovery Channel unleashed its first ever Shark Week in July 17th, which is a couple of days away.
Yeah.
It's going to be birthday for Shark Week. Does it end on the 17th every year?
No. So it's usually somewhere in between July and August. This year it started July 7th and it'll go through the 14th.
Okay.
So it's for a week, and you might get into this, but like for a couple of years, it wasn't making enough revenue, so they would do like Shark Week on just a weekend, and then there was a lot of demand for it, and then they went back to the full week.
Right.
And I've watched it every year since 1988, so.
Well, this whole theme wasn't just about scaring you out of the ocean. Well, mostly it was, but... They were really aimed to educate people on sharks and the shark behavior and to clear up like some myths that I think maybe Jaws created.
Yes.
So
it was the Jaws phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now since then, Shark Week has been an annual sensation, making waves with shark science and thrilling shows that remind us of how we love watching sharks from the safety of our couches.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. In another life, I would have been a marine biologist.
You still can do it.
Well, now I can. You got to live near the water for that, and I don't. So, I mean, thought things through again, I might have gone that way. I know a lot of people that I grew up with did, just because the water obviously was right there. And had interest in science and environmental work, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can work at SeaWorld.
I mean, you could.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have, I don't think they have sharks, but they definitely have whales and stuff.
They probably have a shark species.
Yeah, maybe.
Nerf sharks are a lot of times the ones that they have in captivity.
Yeah.
We'll talk about captivity here in a minute,
too. Okay. All right. Well, there are 500 different species of sharks known to science. This varies greatly in size, habitat, behavior, and appearance, ranging from tiny little dwarf lantern sharks, which are about 8 inches long, little baby.
So cute.
Little baby. And the massive great white, as we know, which can reach 40 feet in length.
Well, the whale shark.
The whale shark. The whale shark.
Yes.
When I say great white.
You said great white, and I was like,
I got jaws on the mind. I got jaws on the mind. All right. Well, buckle up for a deep dive in Nat's Nutty News, Shark Edition, featuring the top 10 headlines and some crazy-ass life shark encounters.
Okay.
So let's just dive in head first, shall we? Okay, well.
You don't dive in head first, by the way.
Why not? Yeah, sure you can.
If you go scuba diving, you don't go head first.
Don't you roll? Don't you just go forward?
No. You if you're on the boat, you jump off.
Right.
Or you go backwards.
Backwards. Okay, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, kicking off the list at number 10 is the Double Trouble Duo. Ooh. In July 2017, Surfer Today headline read, "Pro surfer faces two great white sharks during competition." Oof. Mm. He literally faced off with these two.
Yeah.
Now, pro surfer Mick Fanning, 35, had a great day at Jeffreys Bay when two great white sharks decided to tag team him during a competition. Mm-hmm. He managed to fend them off, like his board. I guess they were just trying to bite his board and stuff. So he just started punching in order to escape. And he did escape.
Yep.
And he escaped completely unharmed. It was like they were auditioning for Shark Week, Kat. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, the cameras are here. Let's go. So Mick stated in the article, I guess the sharks just wanted an autograph and a bite of my board. So he has a personality, you know.
I think that name sounds really, really familiar. I think he's friends with Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth did a document series on sharks.
Right.
Like, what was with National Geographic. And it was a really good series. It was educational because he's a surfer. He's obviously been to Australia, has lived on the water his whole life. And I want to say the name sounds familiar. I think that's one of the people that he brought in as like a guest on one of the episodes. It was really cool.
Thor?
I forget what it was called. Ah.
Thor. Wow. Okay.
Thor.
Number 9, August 2015, Queensland Times headline reads, man rescues bull shark, gets bitten in return.
Okay. Of course.
Well, we have the world's least grateful shark. James Grant, 42, rescued a stranded bull shark and got a love bite in return. Mm-hmm. James, with his lightning reflexes, escaped with a fantastic story. See what I did there? See what I did there?
Didn't.
James Grant stated, next time I'll just send a get well card.
Well, and see, and that's the thing is they're already panicked.
Yeah.
They don't know you're trying to help them.
It's true.
Although, so speaking kind of on the same thing, I saw a headline this last week where there was a free diver. Mm-hmm. And he saw where a dolphin was trapped in something and was drowning, essentially. So he went down, rescued the dolphin.
Right.
And because he was so far deep, was in trouble. He couldn't have gotten up fast enough. Well, you know, the dolphin came in and helped him get up.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, dolphins are smart.
Wow. They are. Wow.
Aww, that's a way to say thank you.
Yeah. All right. Number 8. In September 2016, Evans Head Herald reporter headline reads, great white shark hops aboard fisherman's boat. Mm-hmm. 73-year-old Terry Salwood, who got the biggest surprise of his life when a great white shark decided to join him on the deck of his boat in Evans Head, Australia.
Wow.
Terry told the reporter, I've had fish jump onto my boat before, but I've never had a whole seafood platter jump on the boat. So I guess he just needed a bigger boat.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
How
big was the shark? Do you know?
I don't. Oh, I didn't even think about looking at. See, you got the shark mind. Mm. You're thinking about these things. Okay, so next one. May 2018, Hawaii Tribune headline reads, surfer turns shark puncher in Hawaii. Chris Blow. Oh, nice name too. Chris Blow had a gnarly wipeout in Hawaii when a shark decided to crash his wave. Chris responded with some quick jabs, proving that sometimes you just got to take a swing.
Yeah.
He was able to scare the shark and the shark left.
Well, because their noses are so sensitive. And that's what they say. Like, you know, if they're coming at you without getting your hands, you know, stuck where the teeth are, like in the nose area, they're so sensitive that.
Yeah.
Because that's where all the electrodes and stuff, and that's how they sense pulses in the water from like miles away.
Yeah. Easy. Next one. Number 6. October 2017, Marine News Weekly headline reads, shark whisperer gets personal. 38-year-old marine biologist Emily Johnson, known for her unique connection with sharks, swims amongst them fearlessly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But one day, a curious shark got a little too close for comfort, giving Emily a nip on her leg. Mm-hmm. Now, despite the scare, our shark whisperer continues to do, you know,
of course,
swim with the creatures and just do the good Lord's work of swimming with sharks. I mean, shark whisperer. I don't know what that.
I love it.
Emily stated to the reporter, sharks are misunderstood. It's all about respect and understanding. And I understand. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. They're not invading.
No.
And you know, that's their home.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Did you see that meme I sent you with the shark? And it says, the shark is my
emotional support animal.
Yes, is my emotional support animal. I mean, that's their territory. That's their home.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know. You're not the top of the food chain. Like, we need to understand that. Okay, number five. And this may be a case of mistaken identity.
Oh.
So, March 2019, the Great Barrier Reef Gazette headline reads, Shark versus Smartphone, a selfie mishap. 32-year-old diver Sarah Brown had a hilarious moment with the shark, mistaking her smartphone for something else. So I guess he got triggered by this shiny little whatever.
Yes, yes. Yep.
The confused shark ended up bumping into Sarah, who managed to kind of still get capture her selfie. But it was like when she got the selfie, it was like the shark coming at her. So, like, okay, seriously. So
he photobombed her selfie.
He totally photobombed her. Oh, she's lucky to be alive. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's why they say, like, don't go in the water with shiny things. And a lot of times, too, that, like, our tanks, the tanks are colored, you know, like a darker color versus being, like, a silvery and shiny because it can be reflection, that kind of thing. If you think about it, like tuna, if they're in the water and there's a sun reflecting off it, there's an illumination that looks, and it's shiny. You
know? Right.
And they could mistake in that. And I'm not saying that's what it is, but for me, understanding it, they could mistake in that anything, a shiny object for something that they would like to eat.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. So number four, the Ocean Explorer magazine headline reads, The Curious Little Gray Nurse Shark. In 2009, a group of divers had an unexpected visitor, a curious shark that seemed more interested in exploring than attacking. The 10-foot-long gray nurse shark decided to join them, nudging them along as almost to guide them through the dive site. The divers were amused, and they captured the moment on their underwater cameras, and it turned out that it seems like the shark even enjoyed their vacation. So, like, I think the shark
was
just
curious. It
was
their tour guide.
Yeah, the shark was just curious.
That's cool.
But still, a little too close for me. All right, number three. Destin Times headline reads, The not-so-stealthy shark foiled in Florida beach prank. In 2007, beachgoers in Destin, Florida witnessed a comical scene when a juvenile bull shark attempted like a stealth mission on the swimmers. The shark was about 4 feet long, and it thought it was being like stealthy approaching them and that like behind the swimmers, like just like sneaking up on them. But every time the swimmers turned around, the shark would like shimmy off. So it was looking at the beachgoers, and they said that it would kind of poke out of the water when they would turn around. He would poke out of the water when they would turn back and go into the water. So
nothing to see here,
He's not very good at stealth mode. This one shark.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So number two, February 2023, Ocean Time headline reads: Fantastic bromance. Shark befriends diver off the coast of the Bahamas. In an unexpected twist beneath the waves, a diver in the Bahamas found themselves in a fishy friendship with a curious lemon shark. Forget Jaws. This shark was giving gentle nudges and perhaps even offering fin shakes. This is actually from their story. So the humor here, they're just all kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Marine biologists are scratching their heads, wondering if this was true friendship or just another fishy tale from the deep.
I think it's a chance encounter.
It is, yeah. And finally, number one, Sydney Chronicle headline, Chopper versus Shark. Here we might have the world's most determined shark. So in 2006, when a helicopter pilot, 45-year-old man, John McGuire, crashed into the water off of Sydney, a shark started circling the crash site immediately and then started attacking it. And then John McGuire was able to get rescued, but the shark never left the site. Like, somebody had to come in because if this thing was going, the thing was sinking and he was kind of like crawling on top of the chopper.
Yeah.
And the shark was just waiting. It was just waiting, getting deeper.
That reminds me of Jaws 2. Yeah, it was Jaws 2 when the chopper came in to save the teenage kids that were kind of caught out there.
Yes.
And he ends up getting
eaten. That's right. That's right. Oh, my God. All right. Well, John McGuire stated, I've heard of flying fish, but this is ridiculous. But despite being an apex predator themselves, they are afraid of things that lurk in the deep blue, sharks. One of them is orcas. Killer whales, known for, like, killer whales are, they prey on sharks. They will kill a shark like that.
Yep.
And
they're pack animals. They do it as a group.
Yeah. Oof, that's scary. They scare me more than sharks. And sharks are very smart though and aware of their surroundings. So if there's an orca like in the vicinity, sharks will just alter their behavior or even flee. Like they'll get the hell out of there. Like, no, yeah. Number two, and I know you probably you mentioned it before, electrical fields, like they're sensitive. So
Very.
if you have some type of artificial electrical field happening near the water or in the water, it's going to affect them. Number three, unusual and aggressive behavior. Some sharks may avoid humans or unfamiliar objects because they're afraid of you. They're
Yeah,
like, what the
they're
hell
like,
is this person doing?
right, who is in my home? I've never seen you before. What are
Right.
you? Yeah. I mean, you get I say some people, some sharks that are like curious
Yeah.
and like want to kind of come up to you. When they bite, they don't have hands. They don't, they can't go out and like touch you and be like, what are
Right.
you?
Right. They do it with their mouth.
They do.
And then bright lights and sudden movements. So like sharks are sensitive to any type of changes to their environment. Could be bright lights, electrical fields, rapid movements. I guess that's why when you have a shark and you're freaking out, like flailing, you're just causing a bigger situation. So it's not all fun and games for sharks. They get scared too. So, they have feelings. So hashtag hug a shark. Okay. Not really. No, don't hug a shark, but that's my opening.
Cool. No, that's some good stuff. That's some really good stuff. So maybe with all of our Sharkopedia that we're talking about today, that the Discovery Channel will have us on one of those shows.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I mean, don't they know who we are?
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Well, as we get into our story, this story made absolute headlines and still really. So, as you get into it, it actually uncovers a couple of other crimes that are unfolded by a shark regurgitating an arm. So, it just initiated literally two separate investigations, which is crazy.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Murder and sharks and murder. This just in. April 25th, 1935, in Sydney, Australia, a human arm was regurgitated by a captive 3.5-meter tiger shark, resulting in subsequently a murder investigation and trial. Dun, dun, dun. I
Oh my God, I'm surprised you didn't do your Australian accent.
don't really have a good one. Put another shrimp on the barbie. Well, during mid-April of 1935, a 14-foot, 1-ton tiger shark was caught just under 2 miles from Coogee Beach and transferred to the Coogee Aquarium Baths, where it was displayed publicly. At the time in Sydney, the shark was quote unquote public enemy number one, since as of late February of 1935 to early March, three young men had been taken by sharks killed at the New South Wales beaches. Bounty hunters were employed to help rid Sydney's beaches of the menaces. So crowds now flocked to see this monster with man-eating capabilities, which originally had given them a run for the money. Like, didn't want anything to do with them, but now that there's one in captivity, they're like, oh, let me see. I want to see. Now, Sydney residents may have dreaded spotting sharks on the beach, but after the summer of 1935, they were eager to see one in captivity. The new exhibit turned out to be just what the community needed, essentially, after these shark attacks. Following the demolition of a nearby Coogee Pier, which housed a lot of, like, an arcade, a theater, like, a lot of other entertainment. If you can imagine, think of, like, the New Jersey Shore, Atlantic City, there's, like, all these different things along the beach. That's kind of what I picture. Since the demolition and kind of the destruction of that, a lot of, like, the populated area declined. But with a fearsome tiger shark on display, people suddenly started to flock to the aquarium and get excited again. The frenzy around the creature peaked on Anzac Day. It's a holiday similar to Memorial Day in the US, and it's observed in both Australia and New Zealand on April 25th. On their day off, many people bought a ticket to the aquarium and made a beeline for the tiger shark tank. After reading headlines of shark attacks all summer, it would have been cathartic to see one up close in a safe environment. After several days, the shark seemed quite active, had a voracious appetite. Within a week, it appeared ill, moved slowly, and was seemingly disoriented, was moving sluggishly around its 25 by 15 foot pool, bumping into the walls and sinking to the tank's floor. That's sick shark. Like, that's not a healthy
Yeah,
shark.
no, so bad.
It swam as if there was something weighing it down, and then it puked. vomited in front of a small crowd, leaving a left hand and forearm of a man bearing a distinctive tattoo floating in the pool. Now, before it was captured, the tiger shark had devoured a smaller shark. It was this smaller shark that had originally swallowed the human arm. So 3 days later, after the arm was regurgitated, the aquarium owners did kill the shark, and a post-mortem examination revealed that the remains of another shark were inside, a few fish bones, but no other remains. So, okay, what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. Now, at first, it was presumed that it was another tragic accident of 1935, like, oh, it's just another shark attack.
Right.
But a medical examination of the arm revealed that it had not been bitten off by the shark, but had been removed from its body with either a knife or another sharp instrument, and not in a very surgical procedure. So it wasn't like it was amputated intentionally. You know what I mean? So it was just like somebody who just went in for like a hacksaw and just cut it off.
Oh, so maybe somebody's trying to get rid of body parts?
Bingo.
Oh, okay.
So they excluded it was from a shark attack, and they excluded the fact that it wasn't surgical. But the focus on the investigation now turned to murder because it had looked like it had been intentional.
Mm.
The gastric juices of sharks are highly acidic, but it was estimated that the arm could have been in its stomach for between 8 and 18 days. Yet, the arm was so well preserved that there was still the recognizable tattoo of two boxers shaping up for a fight on his forearm. It's going to come into play, too.
Okay.
Now, after a description of the tattoo was published in the Sydney Truth, Edwin Smith was reading about what had happened at the aquarium when he came across the detail that made him pause. A description of the distinctive tattoo branding on the arm that was recovered from the tiger shark. Now, located on the victim's forearm, again, two boxers facing each other, posing for a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Edwin immediately recognized this and came forward to identify the arm as his brother, Jimmy, or James, Smith, who was born in England in 1890. Now, Jimmy had been missing since April 7th. So by the time this had been about, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And because of the well-preserved state of the arm, police managed to obtain some fingerprints, which did confirm that the arm, in fact, had belonged to Jimmy. So they confirmed it through fingerprints. Now, Jimmy, he was a bankrupt builder, a former bookmaker, a boxer, and a small-time criminal with a record of minor convictions who came to be involved in illegal gambling that was prevalent throughout Sydney at the time. He was also a police informer, or a fizza, or a fizz gig,
okay,
as they were called at the time. I didn't know that. A fizza.
A fizza.
And he had informed on a young man called Eddie Wayman. Now, as a result of the information that Jimmy gave to police, Wayman and one of his mates were caught red-handed raiding a bank. Now, early inquiries correctly implicated a Sydney businessman named Reginald William Lloyd Holmes. That's a name. Holmes, we're just going to call him, was a seemingly respectable entrepreneur who ran a highly successful boat building business on the harbor foreshore of McMahon's Point on Lavender Bay. But Holmes was also known to be involved with other activities. He controlled a lucrative smuggling ring using his speedboats that were built at his boat shed to pick up cocaine, cigarettes, and other contraband that were thrown overboard from ships passing by. So, like, they would make some courtside communication.
Right.
Morse code. Do, 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 go to a location.
Right.
You know, pick up the stuff that this drugs or whatever that the ship accidentally dropped.
Right. Right.
And it fell off go the by truck. And pick it up.
Yeah.
It fell off the truck. Yeah. Now, at times, Holmes had also employed Jimmy, and Jimmy often drove some of his speedboats during the smuggling operations. So soon afterwards, the pair began criminal activities with their friend, Patrick Francis Brady. He was an ex-serviceman. He was known by the law to be an expert forger as well. Police were able to establish that Jimmy Smith had been blackmailing Holmes over a failed insurance claim in 1934, in which an overinsured pleasure cruiser named Pathfinder was sunk near Terrigal. Now, Holmes filed the claim for the damages of the loss of the speedboat, and he later learned that Jimmy reported it as a suspicious activity to the police. They go out.
Yeah.
Intentionally sink this boat.
Mm-hmm.
Holmes makes a claim, and then Jimmy's like, it was suspicious. You might want to look into it.
Oh.
Well, this led to a falling out between the two, right? And then this was exacerbated even more when Jimmy began blackmailing Holmes. And like, I'll do this unless you pay me. A lot of shady shit going on.
Yeah.
So Jimmy was last seen drinking and playing cards with Patrick Brady, the third of the trio, at the Cecil Hotel. Not the Cecil Hotel.
Oh.
A Cecil Hotel. Okay. In southern Sydney. Okay. On April 7th, 1935, Jimmy had told his wife Gladys he was going fishing. She didn't know he was going drinking and playing cards. Brady rented a small cottage on Tolombi Street, which was in Cronulla, a suburb of Sydney. And at the time, this is when police alleged that Jimmy was murdered. It was at this cottage that Patrick Brady had rented.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Port Hacking and Gunnamatta Bay were searched by the Navy and the Air Force, but the rest of Jimmy's body was never found. Like, once they identified who it was and where this probably happened,
right,
they did a search, but they could never find the rest of his body. A taxicab driver testified he had taken Patrick Brady to Holmes's address at 3 Bayview Street on McMahon's Point the day Jimmy had gone missing. And the taxi driver described Patrick Brady as he was disheveled, he had his hand in his pocket and wouldn't take it out, and it was clear that he was frightened.
Oh.
Now, even with the two suspects, right? So they have Holmes because they found out that Jimmy was blackmailing him, and now they've got Patrick Brady because he was the last one seen with Jimmy. So police have two suspects, a motive, and a severed arm. But the case was far from being closed.
Oh my
now, all
God.
The evidence that police had collected so far against Patrick Brady and Holmes were purely circumstantial. They needed a confession.
Oh.
So Brady was arrested May 16th, 1935, but on forgery charges unrelated to the crime. They just kind of used this as a way to get him in.
Yeah.
It took cops about 6 hours of grueling interrogation to get him in to confess what they had already suspected. Brady said Reginald Holmes was the mastermind behind the plot, but Patrick Brady was later charged with the murder of Jimmy Smith.
Oh, okay.
They also brought Holmes in, and he denied ever even knowing Brady at first. 4 days later, May 20th, Holmes went to his boat shed, climbed into a very fast speedboat, one that they had built, and sped out of the harbor. He then pulled out a pistol and attempted to shoot himself in the head with a .32 caliber. Now, at one point, on his way out there, he had stopped the boat and rose before a group of spectators that were gathered to, like, watch this chase, because the police actually were after him at that moment.
Right.
And he he yelled out, quote, "Jimmy Smith is dead and there's only one left. If you leave me until tonight, I will finish him," end quote.
Oh my God, how dramatic. Oh my God. Yeah. It's like O.J. Simpson, 1935.
Yeah. Well, then
the
he
water.
Shot him on the water. Well, then he shot himself in the head.
Oh.
But the bullet flattened against the bone of his forehead and made him fall into the water. A rope also got caught around one of his wrists as he fell into the water, which stopped him from drowning. But also when he hit the water, the shock of the water revived him and he crawled back aboard. And essentially, he was just stunned. He's like, shit.
He's got terrible luck. He's got
that didn't work.
All he's doing is chumming up the water at this point.
Yes. And he was subsequently, again, chased by two police on speedboats around Sydney Harbor. And this lasted for 4 hours. Like, he knew police were on the way. He got into his speedboat, you know, goes out and was like, "Jimmy's dead and I'm going to get the other one." Then tries to kill himself. Doesn't do it. Or, like, isn't successful.
Yeah.
Climbs into the boat. Then goes on for another boat chase.
Oh, my God.
It took 4 hours, but they did finally catch him. They did take him to the hospital. He was cleared. And then he was detained and questioned. So, you know, Patrick Brady said it was Holmes. Well, Holmes said it was Patrick Brady. He identified Brady as Jimmy's murderer and painted himself as a victim of blackmail. He told Detective Sergeant Frank Matthews that Brady had killed Jimmy, dismembered his body, and stowed it in the trunk, and then took it out to Gunnamatta Bay to dispose of the body. Now, according to his story, Holmes' story, Brady acted alone while he killed and dismembered Jimmy in his cottage, and then allegedly dumped most of the body parts in the sea, but held onto the arm to use it as to threaten Holmes. So he was like, "This is his arm.
That's a hell of a story.
You know, you can be next." So he threatened Holmes with murder if Brady did not receive 500 pounds immediately. Holmes also admitted that after Brady had left his home, he traveled to the Sydney coastal suburb of Maroubra and discarded Jimmy's arm into the surf. Now, 500 pounds is equivalent today, you know, money time converter and all the things, $56,000.
Wow. Holmes admitted to transporting that arm.
Yes, to dumping it in the water.
Okay. And 500 is 56 today?
500 pounds is $56,000 today. Yeah. That's so time money converter and like, you know, money exchange, currency exchange and everything like that. So crazy, right? Well, on June 11th, 1935, Holmes did withdraw the money from his account. Late in the evening, he left home, told his wife he had to go meet somebody. He was very cautious when he left his home, and his wife had walked him to the door, but he was never seen again. The morning of June 12th, he was found dead in his car at Hickson Road and apparently had been shot 3 times at close range.
Ooh, now, plot thickens.
Yeah. So the crime scene was made to appear that Holmes had committed suicide. However, forensic police had no doubt that he was murdered. Holmes was due to give evidence at Jimmy's inquest later that morning with the charges against Patrick Brady. Mm-hmm. Police suspect that Holmes hired a hitman to do the job after he, one, failed to do it himself, and then, two, he took out a substantial life insurance policy. The policy would have been voided if it was suicide, so he used a con artist to pull off one last grift to make sure his family was taken care of.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Though the crimes were never formally linked, author Alex Castles offered an opinion that Eddie Wyman was likely the suspect for the murder of Holmes. Now, if you remember, Eddie Wyman was the person that Jimmy was ratting on to the police in the beginning of the story.
What, did they forget about him? What happened to Eddie? So he just kind of got off light. Like he was like probably super happy.
He was one of the most dangerous criminals in Sydney in the 1930s, at a time when the underworld was populated by hard men and women who didn't hesitate to use violence to get what they wanted. This was just the culture of Sydney at the time. He was one of the most dangerous criminals in Sydney at the time.
Oh boy.
And they could never really prove for a fact that Holmes hired Eddie to take him out. Holmes was cremated at the Northern Suburbs Crematorium on June 13th, the next day, which I thought was crazy. That's really super fast. Mm-hmm. But he left an estate valued over at £34,000 in 1935, which is $3.8 million today. Time, money, currency exchange, conversion.
What did he take care of his family? His family's good. They're ends of meeting.
Yeah.
They don't need insurance.
The life insurance would have been, because he had the boat business, right? He was a pretty lucrative businessman.
Right.
With a shady side. With the insurance policy and everything, it added up to $3.8 million.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how much his life insurance policy was for, but had it been suicide, that would have been voided and his family wouldn't have gotten it. Now, on the same day that Holmes was found dead in his car with gunshot wounds to his chest, June 12th, the coroner's inquest into Jimmy Smith's death began at the city coroner's court directed by a Mr. E.T. Oram. Although Holmes was the inquest's main witness, he was never offered police protection before his testimony could be heard. Patrick Brady survived to see his murder trial, but it wasn't an open and shut case prosecutors had hoped for. They suffered without Holmes's testimony. And the physical evidence that they had was less incriminating than it seemed. So the lawyer representing Brady, Clive Evatt, claimed to the coroner that there was not enough substance to begin the inquest. Mm-hmm. Evatt argued that an arm, quote, did not constitute a body, end quote, and that Jimmy, minus his arm, could still be alive.
Oh,
which is true, despite what Holmes had said. This case is still unsolved.
What?
Yes. The inquest's most important witness, Holmes, was dead. The case against Brady was insufficient due to lack of evidence. Uh-huh. The shark arm murders suggest that Jimmy Smith was killed by Brady on the orders of gangster Eddie Wyman, who was arrested while attempting to defraud a bank with a forged check in 1934, and later during a bank robbery, apparently due to information Jimmy had given to the police. Jimmy had been exposed as a police informant, and there would have been a target for his assassination. So they still have that angle that they were trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Police charged Brady with the murder, and although he was later acquitted for 30 years, Brady maintained that he was in no way involved with the murder of Jimmy. He died at Concord Recreation General Hospital in Sydney, April 18, 1965, at the age of 76. Years later, people are still amazed by the circumstances of this case, even as early as a 1952 article in the Brisbane Telegraph that said, quote, "Nothing would have been known of the tragedy had the shark not swallowed the tattooed arm. It was amazing that, of all the sharks in the deep, this particular one would have been caught," end quote.
Right. But the shark is innocent.
The shark is innocent. And the tiger shark swallowed another shark. It was the other shark that swallowed the arm.
Wow.
So, and then he was captured, regurgitated, and killed.
This is a crazy chain of events. Like, this is just a crazy, chaotic chain of events.
Yes. So it actually has been, there's a lot of cultural references. There's a lot of things that have, like, kind of covered this case.
Right.
One is the investigation of Jimmy Smith, and his severed arm actually became very legendary in Australia's legal history. It inspired a TV play called The Grey Nurse Said Nothing. In his 1995 book, The Shark Arm Murders, Professor Alex Castles claims that Holmes took out a contract on his own life to spare his family and the public disgrace of a conviction.
Wow.
Bill Bryson also mentions this case in his book called Down Under, which is known in the U.S. as In a Sunburned Country. But he wrongly implied that the arm belonged to a swimmer who was eaten by a shark. So he got his stuff mixed up.
Yeah.
The shark arm case was the basis of a 2003 episode of CSI Miami. And this case was also featured on season 5, episode 2 of BuzzFeed Unsolved, featuring our friends. I guess you could say, are they our friends?
Yes, I'm a Shane.
I think we're friends.
I'm a Shane.
You're
girl.
A Shaniac. You're a Shaniac and yes. I'm a Bulgarian. Mm-hmm. Yes. Shane and Ryan. It was also the basis for season 4, episode 15 of the TV show Psych. Now,
I
this was.
Psych.
I know, Psych is great. This episode was titled The Head, The Tail, The Whole Damn Episode.
I
and that's a
job that.
Reference, by the way. When Quint goes, to head, the tail, the whole damn thing.
Yes. I remember that episode. I remember.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I do. I used to watch that all the time. Wow.
Yeah, Psycho's great. And that is the conclusion in the mysterious involvement around the shark arm murder case.
Wow. That is a series of bad, unfortunate events.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That went from an arm that was in a shark. Another shark came, ate that shark. Mm-hmm. Somehow the acid did not break down the arm.
Mm-hmm.
The shark, like, took it with, like, it's just weird how this all kind of. Mm-hmm.
And maybe because the smaller shark is the one that ate the arm.
Yeah.
And then he was killed by the bigger shark. But the
right.
bigger shark's stomach acid didn't get through to the arm because it was.
Wrapped in the old shark.
Yeah.
That's so freaky. That's, yeah. Ooh.
And then you got a boxing tattoo.
Right.
On a severed arm that just kind of, you know. Bleh.
Yeah.
I was reading another article of a witness that said, once the foam started to go away, we saw the arm. Because it's all the stomach acid and everything, obviously, that the shark is regurgitating. And I was like, bleh. I can picture it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's a crazy story.
When you started the story, when you were like, oh, you know, like they got the shark from attacks and they were like, putting it in a museum or whatever,
an aquarium. Yeah.
That reminded me of Jaws. Remember the time when they hung the shark up? They were like, we got it. We got the shark. And everybody from the town came to just see the shark, it.
Well, and that's when Hoopa, Dr. Hoopa, goes out and he starts, you know, measuring the bite radius. It was a tiger shark.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, the one that they caught, that they thought was the one that ate the little boy, was a tiger shark.
Right.
And then that's when Dr. Hoopa was telling him, nope, that's a tiger shark. You're looking for a carius concarius.
That's
right. What the hell is that? It's a great white.
Is that the guy that scratches his nails on the board?
So that's Quint.
Quint.
Yeah. Robert Shaw. So he was the one who scratched his, and he was the one who said, for $10,000, I'll give you the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. Because they were offering, like the family was offering like a bounty for the one that caught the shark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the chances are of you catching the same exact shark that attacks somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, no.
The sea is very big. It's very vast.
Yes.
Very vast. Oh, my God.
Yeah. There we go.
That was good. That was good. That was our Jaws, well, our shark episode, our Shark Week episode.
It's Crime Chat Shark Week.
Yes.
Well, by the time this comes out, Shark Week will be over. But anyway,
you know what we need to do? So we need to add Sharky to the family of Skishy
and Nuggy.
Nuggy and the scary clown. We got to get a little Sharky to go along with them. It's a little family.
Aw, you can get another little mascot.
Yeah.
Sharky. Well, so Biscuit, did I tell you this? When we went to Myrtle Beach and just kind of went out there for a day trip, we got him a toy, and it's a hammerhead shark. It's squeaky, and the fins are crackly or whatever.
Yeah.
But we named him Sharky.
Sharky.
get your Sharky. And he'll go out and he'll run it out and he'll go get a Sharky. Yeah. That's he so brings cute. Sharky to bed.
That's so cute. Oh, well, thank you for doing that. That was fun. You're welcome. That was a fun episode. Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, chatters, because we want to leave you hanging. For more information on this case, please check out After That Crying Chat, only available on Patreon.
And don't forget to follow us on all of our socials, Crime Chat with Nat Cat, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, X. See what we got going on.
Yes. Remember, Crime Chat with Nat Cat, when you become a VIP chatter to our Patreon, you'll have access to bonus episodes, behind the scenes, the bloopers, which are hilarious, and the free merch. So please check out some merch in the works.
Yes, and as a reminder, the first Saturday of the month coming up, we do skip that week to research and give you better stories of dark crimes, evil minds, and occasionally the unknown. So our next episode after that will be August 10th.
August 10th. All right. Well, either way, you don't want to miss it, chatters. So be here.
We'll see you next time at the Crime Chat.